Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Millennial Movie Mix, where today we're covering A League of Their Own from 1992. I'm Kristen, the accomplished tea maker, and with me, as always...
Is Justin. Did anyone ever tell you you look like a penis with a little hat on?
And Sarah, there's no crying in baseball.
And Ashley, avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan.
Specifically you, Jimmy Dugan, stop with that clap. That's enough.
He told, like, 8-year-olds to avoid the clap.
I mean, I guess it is good advice to anyone.
It's excellent advice. Advice that I stand.
You can't argue with that.
No.
So, A League of Their Own, this is our last entry in May Queens. Yeah. I mean, and we could have chosen, like, any movies that showcase, like, powerhouse females. And A League of Their Own... is a good one because it has so many.
So many.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, okay, so there's so much to talk about with this as a May Queen movie. Looking at it this time, I have some questions about what kind of female film, like empowerment film it actually is.
Yeah, so many questions.
So I want to get into that. But I want to right away just go ahead and like throw it out there that the budget for this movie was $40 million and it made $132.4 million. But it's like Tom Hanks's like lowest film of that time because Big made $151 million. Philadelphia the next year made $206 million.
Jeez.
Sleepless in Seattle had made $227 million.
Jeez.
And so then you look at A League of Their Own making $132 million, and you're like, huh. And that's, I know that's a lot, but then when you look at, like, Philadelphia made $206 and Big made $151.
Right. It did like, make a lot of money for, like, the time period it was in.
And like, was it the concept? Was it because it was a female-driven movie about baseball? Like, did the box office actually reflect the problem that they had getting people into the stands in the film?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. It was also like 2 hours long, so I guess you could have also watched like a baseball game if that's what you were wanting.
Like, and I am odd and strange in so many ways, but I've always preferred sports movies to actual sports.
Yeah, same.
There's a character development.
Exactly.
You can actually root for somebody.
Right.
When we look at people who we are rooting for in A League of Their Own, I wanted to right off the bat, I mean, top number one queen of diamonds, the May Queen, is Gina Davis.
Oh yeah,
she killed it.
Where do you know Gina Davis from?
Stuart Little and Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Stuart Little.
I think one of the first things I saw her in was Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Earth Girls Are Easy?
I haven't.
I've never heard of that.
Jeff Goldblum.
And isn't Downtown Julie Brown in it too? And is it Jim Carrey?
I do not remember that much about that movie.
It's a musical, right?
What? No way. I don't think so.
Oh my God. I haven't seen it in so long. Okay, we have to watch it again. But yeah, we're going to have to look that one up. Stuart Little, of course, she was in 3 Stuart Little movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of crazy that they made 3 of those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gina Davis. So movies that I know that you might not know. Speechless with Michael Keaton. They played like journalists. She was in one called Hero. I can't remember who was in that, but about a guy who like fakes being like doing something grand. I don't know. I wrote down Earth Girls Are Easy, most definitely. How about The Fly?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I forgot about The Fly.
Yeah, she is brilliant in The Fly, and she's so good. Thelma and Louise.
Haven't seen it.
See, I thought about Thelma and Louise for our first like May Queens, but I just thought that they're more in A League of Their Own. There's more to it. But we definitely could do Thelma and Louise in the future, especially if nobody's seen it. Yeah, it's like a quintessential female empowerment movie.
Yeah, I think I've seen it, but they probably haven't.
She pops up in a movie called Tootsie. How about Transylvania 65000?
No.
Nope.
Oh, she plays a sexy vampire. Ooh. In Transylvania 65000.
Ooh.
Do you know that she was on TV?
No.
Yeah, she did a television show called Commander in Chief, where she played the first female president.
Oh, yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah, I've seen that.
She's popped up currently on Grey's Anatomy in like several, like I think 13 or 20 something episodes. She also popped up in the third season of Glow mm-hmm. on Netflix.
I was just
going to
say that.
Oh, I love Glow.
Oh, she's such a good part in season 3. She's won an Oscar for a movie called The Accidental Tourist. I've never seen that one. I feel bad that I haven't seen it. And that's the one she won an Oscar for.
Right. I feel like we should watch it.
We should. I mean, just because we haven't seen it.
Right.
My favorite Gina Davis. I want to do so badly for the podcast, but it's an absolute guilty pleasure. And it's called The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Why a guilty pleasure?
I just feel like, I mean, I don't want to give the plot away because I really want like everyone to watch it. Like, I know you've seen it before, but I don't know if Sarah and Ashley have.
Well, no. No. I mean, it's a good movie. I don't understand why it's a guilty pleasure.
Well, because I think it's a good movie. I guess, you know, other people who don't care about like Oscar caliber acting might, or I don't know. Like, you've got Samuel L. Jackson with Gina Davis in a movie together.
That's enough right there.
Yeah.
Just watch it.
We can just, add it to the list.
I think it's Hennessy in the movie. So Gina Davis, most definitely. But did anybody else stand out to you as a May Queen?
Okay.
Rosie O'Donnell.
I did not realize the whole time watching this movie, like seeing it on TV, watching it 1,000 times, that Kit is Lori Petty.
What?
I did not realize that.
What?
Yeah. I was like, what? I know that voice. And so I looked up the cast and she's the lady in Orange is the New Black.
Yes. What? I'm shook.
She's adorable in this movie.
Mule.
Nay. But yeah, I did not realize that it was her. Because, and like, I know who Lori Petty is, but like, I haven't seen this movie in so long that like looking, I was like, no. Just no, that's not her. Yes, it's her.
Yeah,
oh my
it
god,
is.
It's her.
Sarah, I know you said Rosie O'Donnell, so we'll pick that up in a second. Lori Petty, Ashley, you said that you know her from Orange Is the New Black.
Yes.
Any movies though?
No.
Sarah?
No, I don't think so.
Kristen?
Off the top of my head, I'm not thinking of movies.
I could think of three, like right off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, but you know all the
movies. They were not Point Break and Poetic Justice, which she is in, but they were Free Willy.
I did not know.
In the Army Now.
Yes.
And Tank Girl.
I don't know that I've seen that.
They're remaking Tank Girl, I think. Tank Girl is a post-apocalyptic world where there are kangaroo people as well as normal people.
Awesome.
Yeah. Can we add this? Yeah, let's do this.
It's got a Naomi Watts in it too. Okay. It's actually pretty good. I mean, I believe that I own it on actual DVD.
I will just say that it would be awesome for like women and other people with uteruses who they should have the power to control their uterus like a kangaroo does.
put some sort of request in.
Yeah.
Dear higher power.
Put that into HR.
Yes.
And then of course In the Army Now is her Pauly Shore movie, but we won't hold that against her because I mean Pauly Shore is actually kind of funny in small doses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in small doses.
And I mean in the Army Now is a really good funny movie. Mm-hmm. I mean maybe not as funny as like Son-in-Law, but
yeah.
But you have Lori Petty in that one. Sarah, you said Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
What do you know Rosie O'Donnell from?
So my favorite one is from Tarzan. She's Turk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, like, she, I love you her know, the Rosie it. O'Donnell show. And
the Flintstones.
Yes, yeah. And the Flintstones.
She was Betty.
Yes.
I know Rosie O'Donnell best from a movie called Now and Then.
I don't know that movie. Yeah, Crickets.
It's about four girls who are growing up in the 60s, and then they so then they're adults. So like the adults are played by like Demi Moore, Melanie Griffith, Rosie O'Donnell, and then like the girls are played by like Christina Ricci. And okay. I blanked on like Abby Hoffman, I think. Gabby Hoffman. I blanked on other ones. I'm sorry. Not that they ever listened to the podcast. But so yeah, I know her from
everything.
She's also in another Stakeout, a cop movie where she like dresses in S&M. So like I always remembered that one. That one stood out to me. And then I always had to watch Harriet the Spy with my sister. And she's the like nanny in Harriet the Spy.
Mm-hmm.
But A League of Their Own was her first movie.
Was it really?
She had TV credits, but that's her first movie credit.
Okay.
It didn't say introducing, but if you go back and look, she's also not like one of the big names.
Right. Yeah.
There's also Megan Kavanaugh as Hooch. She was in Jimmy Neutron, Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then.
Yeah, good addition.
I don't remember what this note means, but it says thumbs, question mark. Thumbs. Oh, and Tales from the Crypt.
Thumbs and Tales from the Crypt?
Yes. Girl, I don't know. You guys do code that. Yeah.
You just keep racking.
Yeah, I'll think of it. I might make an exclamation.
Does she ever, like, gives a thumbs up?
No, she doesn't. It's probably some other project she worked on.
Maybe she was on Tales from the Crypt. And we know mm-hmm. she has thumbs.
Well, she was on Tales of the Crypt, but what else would this... I don't know what the thumbs would mean.
Maybe it's not the word thumbs.
It looks... No, it's pretty clearly thumbs.
I do not know. Another May Queen in this movie is Madonna.
Uh-huh.
You don't think she kind of chameleoned into this role.
Yeah, she doesn't really like stand out in any like ostentatious way.
No. I mean, I think she did a really good job. I mean, of course, Madonna is Grammy winning. Golden Globe nominated, I believe, actress. She did the song for this movie, Used to Be My Playground. And she, you know what? I think that was, she was nominated for that Golden Globe, but she didn't win. Because instead, the song A Whole New World from Aladdin won.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So.
Yeah, you can't really be mad at that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. She did. I think that she did end up winning for Austin Powers' Beautiful Stranger.
Hmm.
Good.
Or nominated, something like that. And I think she was either won or nominated again for Ray of Light.
Groovy, like, baby.
Yeah. So she's, and of course, anyone who knows Madonna as an actress knows that she was Evita. In the movie, in the musical Evita.
Mm-hmm.
She was also like in Desperately Seeking Susan. I believe one called Who's That Girl? I'm just going off my brain here because I realized I didn't write any Madonna notes. and she's also Breathless Mahoney in Dick Tracy. You guys ever heard of Dick Tracy?
Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-mm.
It's like the 1930s old school detective. It was based on that used to run in newspapers. Anybody?
Nope.
Okay, so you've seen Hocus Pocus, right?
Oh my god, yes. All
right, so do you remember when they go to the devil's house?
Yes.
She's the devil's wife, Medusa.
Ah.
And the guy who plays the devil is her brother, Gary Marshall.
Oh, shit.
So they are like a powerhouse in Hollywood. Penny Marshall, have you ever heard of a little show called Laverne and Shirley?
Yes.
I've heard of it. She was Laverne. Yes. Okay. Oh.
And then so she took from acting, she went to directing. She's responsible for one of my favorite Whoopi Goldberg movies. I guarantee you've never heard of it. It's called Jumpin' Jack Flash.
No.
I've heard of it, but only because you've mentioned it.
She plays a computer programmer who starts getting this like secret messages from like she intercepts them through the government, and she starts working with like this government agent she can't really trust, and people are trying to kill her because she read the messages she wasn't supposed to read.
I think I have seen that.
You think you have?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have seen it. Well, but Penny I don't Marshall think I've seen it all it. The way through.
She directed Riding in Cars with Boys. It's a Drew Barrymore movie.
I don't think I've seen,
I've seen that one.
Oh, it's like Drew Barrymore. It's a period piece, maybe set in the 50s, where she's growing up as a teenager. It's such a good movie. But that's her, Drew Barrymore. She directed The Preacher's Wife with Denzel Washington and Whitney Houston.
Okay.
And she's also responsible for directing Big with Tom Hanks.
Oh, okay.
So Penny Marshall, yas, queen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have all of these queens under. And this film is just May Queen worthy.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Hollywood queen worthy. It's yas queen worthy.
Yas
queen. Yas queen.
So, like, what's your nostalgia associated with this movie?
Seeing it all the time.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. Always on the TV. Always. Like, never ending.
And I don't, it's the music. Like, as soon as it starts.
Hans Zimmer.
Have that piano, like, music going.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Zimmer is at it again.
Exactly. But then also, like, I don't know what it is, but I can sing every word of that goddamn batters up, hear that call,
the time is horrible come singing. For one and all.
But yeah, that just sticks with me.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the compilation commercial that Sarah and I would wake up to in the middle of the fucking night.
Or with hits from artists such as it scrolls through and highlights what's singing.
Yes.
And then of course there's no crying in baseball. That line went above and beyond this movie.
Yes.
And so like you just knew. And I always remember Gina Davis doing the splits to catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl with the bruise.
Yeah.
That was insane. And, of course,
Tom Hanks peeing. So, like, those are, like, when you think of League of Their Own, what do you think of?
Tom Hanks peeing?
The Madonna movie.
Okay.
Oh, I don't think of it as the Madonna movie. Like I don't know. I just thought of it as, the women's baseball movie.
Yeah, that's what I think of it as.
But I think that you described it perfectly when you said always on. Like, it's one of those ones where when you saw it on, you watched it. We owned it on VHS tape.
Well, and it was on cable constantly after, you know, the certain amount of time from coming out from the theater and then released to TV. Then it was just on forever, like perpetually for like the next 10 years.
Yeah.
On TV.
I don't know if people still know about the movie. We'll have to see what happens. If our listeners from around the world know about A League of Their Own, the American baseball movie. See how that goes.
Tell us if you've heard of it and where you're at.
That's right.
My mom used to babysit, and we rented this one time, and it was like a big deal. But it was 2 hours long and couldn't hold any of our attention. And so that was the one attempt I made at watching this movie. But my husband would always say, "There's no crying in baseball." And I never understood what he meant.
And you're like, now okay, you know. Thank you.
I'm like, okay, because I like literally couldn't care less about baseball.
Sarah, you have some nostalgia for this movie?
I just always remember Dad watching it. Like, because he always repeat watches movies like that. Always sports movies or action movies. Anything with explosions or guns or sports.
Steven Seagal.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Listen, I don't know if this one is because, like, Tom Hanks is so familiar and then baseball's the American pastime. And
yeah,
like really, like, and like Gina Davis is really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And like, she's really good in this movie,
and like, yeah, she's shining in this movie.
Yeah,
like even like her acting, which is what I want to get into. Like, I never really fucking thought about the characters in the movie.
Right.
Like, I can't believe I'm saying that. Like, I don't know if this, like, you talk about nostalgia. Like, we've been so nostalgic by the movie as it's the women's baseball movie. Then, like, when I watched it this time, I had some thoughts.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's interesting. And I guess that leads into what, I mean, is it a triggering movie, Ashley?
I've got, like, a decent paragraph of triggers here. And then a high note that I want to end on.
Okay.
Triggers. We've got World War II, mention of Nazis, suicide jokes, feminism, family values, alcoholism, men getting credit for women's work while they're too busy scratching their balls, objectifying women, tobacco use, assault, DUI. Don't ever drive under the influence of anything. Drugging someone, segregation, deadbeat spouses and parents, and the death of a spouse. But my high note, there is a movie written about one of the women, or it's about one of the women on Netflix, who was on the All-American League for Women, Pat Herschel and Terry Donahue in A Secret Love. It's these two women who kept their relationship secret for 70 years, and they finally came out to their family. It's so sweet.
I love that you say that, because that was one of my issues with the movie.
Yeah, where are all the lesbians?
Where are the lesbians? Yeah. Why aren't they acknowledging any of that?
Right.
And yeah, that's great.
They didn't even really hint at it.
No, and they went out of their way to make sure that everyone talked about a boy or liked a boy or was looking for it. Yeah, exactly.
Even poor sweet Hooch.
Yeah, they married her off. My heart was, I don't care, we'll get to it. My heart was breaking when Rosie O'Donnell was having to talk about her boyfriend
and how he was treating her
and ripped the picture up and everything, knowing that Rosie O'Donnell later came out and then was like, I know that lots of people act in roles and everything, but it would have been a perfect opportunity in this baseball movie to showcase, you know, the strong out actress, but she wasn't out. Mm-hmm. And then she's having to talk about, you know, this guy in a movie where no other characters talk about being gay. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like missed opportunity.
Well, yeah, and it was a real missed opportunity with May's character. Because they're such good friends and really bonded, and they really could have had that connection right there easily.
I know.
And they really super like didn't hint at it at all.
Right.
Yeah. I could see that. I could see that more as Doris would have had an unrequited affection for May.
Yeah. They could have put it into the movie that way. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have had friendship in the movie, but there was an easy end for them to put something like that in the movie. And they specifically and very clearly made it not that way at all.
Yeah. Right. Curious to like think if in an earlier draft they had talked about it, especially Ashley, because of like the story that you just told. So people knew that was, commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it really was. But they had to be like really careful about what they wore when they went out, so they wouldn't, you know, get caught in a raid while they were out at bars or
Like, oh yeah, it was horrendous. They just dropped a really good docuseries on Hulu called Pride. It starts off in the different decades. Like the first one's in the 50s, and it talks about all of the horribly sick things that undercover cops would do to try to bust men for being secretly gay and like soliciting, like in a park or walking down the street. And it goes into when they put laws into effect that gay people couldn't work in the government. So they went after and like threw like they went after your friends. They dug things about your life so they could interview you on record to get you to basically then admit that you were gay and had a secret lifestyle so they could fire you.
Wow.
It's sickening. It was
really horrendous.
That's what I mean. June's Pride Month coming up. Go watch your Hulu documentary and feel good about yourself and the progress that's been made.
Yes.
Ashley, I think that it's really interesting that you put feminism as a trigger, because I think that this might be the first trigger that acknowledges. I mean, we play around with this word snowflake, but like some of us, we kind of know who the real snowflakes are, right? Like, so the people who would have a problem with feminism, but I think it's funny because those are also the people like who would love to sit and watch this movie as a pastime over and over again and not ever think about it being a feminist movie. But then maybe because it really isn't a fucking feminist movie.
Yeah, not so much.
So maybe that's like a big fucking lie. Like they really gave us like pretty people to look at doing something everybody likes to look at, and we didn't fucking ever think about it.
Yeah, it was like a big tease basically. Because you're hoping, like, watching it again now, like, it's crazy watching stuff for podcast because, like, you really, your eyes are, like, open looking for all of these things that you wouldn't necessarily look for when you're just watching a movie to watch it.
Right.
Because the objectification throughout is just so, it's pervasive.
It is.
And it never gets addressed.
No.
It's never addressed.
Yeah, there's no good feeling at the end.
No.
There's only one slight instance where I think they might have hinted that, oh yeah, the women can do what we do, and that's when the guy wants to buy the team at the end.
Yeah,
but the whole movie wasn't about that.
No,
it was about the women and their accomplishments in baseball and their relationships with each other, but that weren't gay, which was a disappointment.
When sometimes I don't know, all those relationships seemed like, I know the movie was long, but it really did seem like it could have been longer, or it could have been, I know they ended up making a TV series out of this. It didn't last for very long.
They did?
Mm-hmm. And like some of the cast came back for it, like Marla came back, I know, and Evelyn came back. And they recast other people, like Dugan and Dottie and Kit. They were all recast. But sometimes I think that it could have gone a little more into everybody else and not just Dottie and Kit, or then like Dottie and Dugan. I mean, everyone else kind of, like, the other members of the cast kind of did become, like, out like, on the side. And then in the end, you're supposed to think, oh, this is a huge celebration. Like, we're supposed to have all of these old women who we remember being these. But they were all such stereotypes that I felt like they weren't very deep characters.
Well, like, I felt like this movie, they were like, let's make this movie and honor these women. And they didn't honor them at all, really. Like, they just told the story and they didn't, like, I don't know. Like, it wasn't about them.
It felt off watching it this time.
Yeah.
And I guess as we go through and we talk about instances, maybe it becomes clear. We might be being really harsh at the start. So, like, I guess let's just start talking about it and see what pops up.
In 1988, Dottie Hinson is reluctant to attend the opening of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League exhibit at the Baseball Hall of Fame, prompting a flashback to 1943 when World War I threatens to shut down Major League Baseball. Candy magnate and Chicago Cubs owner Walter Harvey persuades his fellow owners to bankroll a women's league. Ira Lowenstein is put in charge, and Ernie Capodino is set out to recruit players. Capodino attends an Industrial League softball game in rural Oregon and likes what he sees in Dottie, the catcher for a local dairy's team. Dottie turns down Capodino's offer, happy with her simple farm life while waiting for her husband Bob to come back from the war. Her sister and teammate Kit, however, is desperate to get away and make something of herself. Capodino was not impressed by Kit's batting performance and refuses to evaluate her pitching, but agrees to take her along if she can change Dottie's mind. Dottie eventually agrees, but only for her sister's sake.
Sir, your knee. You like it?
Oh my god.
Oh my god. When
sleaze.
He was such a sleaze. And like,
if I had your job, I'd kill myself.
Yeah, he followed them to the dairy.
Oh my gosh.
He's...
Hey, cowgirls, you see the grass? Don't eat it.
That's when they were milking the cows, and he was like, that would bruise the hell out of me. I was like, what the hell? That's what would end up getting him a bucket of unpasteurized milk on his head.
Right.
He wouldn't waste that. not on Ernie Capodino.
Gladly.
So you get the it starts with old Dottie and like her picture perfect family existence.
Of course, because it's
right. Dottie.
Yeah, the grandson's playing basketball in the driveway. The daughter who is so wise and like obviously like but like wants to get her out of the house. Mm-hmm. You have the dead husband thing already, so like it's a strange thing that then you go through the whole movie like isn't that strange, like you knew he was dead at the beginning of the movie, but then still later in the movie you were supposed to wonder if she was going to get the telegram.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was just off to me. I thought, what?
And also, like, the timing wasn't very good either, because by the time the telegram came, I was like, oh, yeah, she has a husband at some point.
I completely forgot that she did, like, just because, you know, you just get carried away with what she's doing. Like, they don't ever really mention him.
I wonder how, I mean, they wrote the character of Dottie, and I wonder if originally she always had a husband. We're getting ahead of ourselves with Dugan and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, they clearly set it up in the beginning of this movie that her husband's at war and that she is just here on the farm waiting till he gets back. But like, how old are they supposed to be?
Oh shit, I don't know.
No idea. I mean, her looks are probably different from what they expect in the movie.
But then mm-hmm. Is that also because, like, people back in the day, I'm sorry, they looked older?
Yeah, I mean, they did.
Like, you look at someone who was in their 20s in 1950, and it looked like they were, like, 50.
They, like, didn't have SPF or moisturizer.
They had, shit, stress lives. They weren't packed full of preservatives, Botox.
Okay, can I also say that seeing older Dottie when I was watching this when I was younger, I would have sworn up and down that it was just Gina Davis with makeup. Like,
well, maybe it's because it's her voice.
Totally thought that it was Gina Davis. Yeah, it's her voice, obviously. But, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, thought it was Gina Davis with makeup on.
But it's just a separate actress completely.
Yeah, whole different person.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, I was wondering, were that some of those, like, the team members from the All-American League or just actors?
Well, at the end of the movie, they show clips of the real players
mm-hmm.
having a baseball game. So all the people in the movie are actors.
Okay.
I think
they're really good, like, lookalikes for everybody, I thought.
Yeah.
I think that one real baseball player or someone having to do with the league. When the people who were talking about, oh, who's that? That's Dottie Henson. She only played for one season.
Oh, those people, like, in the very end?
Yeah. I don't know, though. But I know that the credits had, like, that woman, I think, listed as something special. So we get introduced to the family life of Kit and Dottie. Mm-hmm. And it is just, I mean, I love that it's like, keep your voice down, Kit. Your dad's listening to the radio.
Yeah.
Well, later they're listening to the radio again, and the mom's like clutching a pillow for dear life. Like she's scared to death. But so it was just like, I don't know. It's so funny to see.
And that was their existence.
Yeah.
Like to think about a time where you did huddle around. I mean, because FDR had fireside chats, you know, where people huddled around their radios and they listened to the president talk. It was like one of the first time that happened where like the president was in your home. So then you think about like how radio was television and social media. I mean, hell, you even have the lady later doing the commentary about how baseball is going to ruin women.
You know? Oh my God.
And like, so that would be a show that, you know, that people would love, you know, it's the Little Orphan Annie and Lone Ranger time where goddamn dad came off the farm and sat down in front of the radio and listened to his programs.
And now you have the Millennial Movie Mix.
That's right. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That you can pause and listen to anytime. Come back to it.
Yeah.
Kit, talking about the people in the audience telling her, why can't she be more like her sister? Going
oh
into
them
talking about, have you ever heard how dad introduces us?
Yeah.
This is our daughter, Dottie. This
our other daughter.
Dottie's sister.
Oh my yeah. God.
Yeah.
And then in that kitchen where she's just saying, I've got to get out. Like, Lori Petty acts the shit out of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, you
yeah,
really feel that she is just trapped.
And you believe her being a younger sister. Man, yeah. Does she kill that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk. So, watching it this time, when they're walking home from the game and Kit starts to walk faster. And then Dottie walks faster. And then Kit's like, I can't even walk faster than you. And Dottie doesn't let her win.
Nope.
Like, you start to see that who Dottie is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
She knows that Kit has a complex.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
She knows she feels down about the game. She knows that all of this. And she still then can't help herself
from
to
one
beat her.
Instigating a race and then two beating her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then has the audacity later to be like, well, I don't need to go play baseball.
Right.
And has to be begged to go do it. And you're thinking like, okay, I'm jumping ahead, but then the rest of the movie, everyone else is like, oh, Dottie, you love it. It looks like you love it. You so love it. And she's like, no.
Yeah, the whole time we're like, no, she doesn't.
We're like, okay, well, so, all right, does she or does she not?
Yeah.
Like, is she lying? Or does she really not fucking like it?
Well, I think she likes it or she wouldn't have done it.
Well, that's what I thought, too. But then she quits and has kids and forgets all about it and plays one season. And then they say repeatedly she only played one season.
Right. Well, I mean, but sometimes you give up the things that you love. You know,
so that's what I'm talking about. Like, then how is that a feminist movie? That's like women, you don't have a life. You're a birth machine.
Mm. Yeah. She gave up like a job that would have like advanced the role of women in society for family.
Yeah.
And it would have paid her really well for the 3 years that they what was it, 3 years?
And then three she years? Made Boomers.
Yeah.
Ah.
So then I guess we just, what I have to then take is take her at her word. And she told us from the very beginning that, so then she is following what she wants in the end of the movie, I guess. I don't know. We'll get to that, to get to more of that. I want to throw out there that also, so in this section, you get the dad. You get the mom who is, like, subservient to the dad, wanting to make sure the girls are quiet. And then you get introduced to Harvey and Lowenstein and Cappadino. And then you also get the crowd. All of these males are fucking assholes.
Yeah, they are.
And, like, they're clearly showing you. They're like, here, look, males are the fucking assholes. And here, look, these females, look, they have compassion. You see how one of them begged and the other one said, yes, I'll do that for you and help you. And then they clearly show you males being fuckheads.
Yeah, like, oh, she's ugly. We won't take her, even though she's wicked talented.
Right.
Yeah, that. I love Wicked. I love in this section when they're talking about the dude who wanted to drive Kit home, and she talks about how he's like, what is it, like a pig or something, and like one step up from a pig, and Dottie's like, but an important step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just really loved that. And I just thought, okay, wait a minute. That we're like, that's, yeah, most of the time, like, guys are just fucking like animalistic. Trash. Like you goopy eyed over this girl. I'll drive you home, Kit. Keep your eye on the ball, you know? Like back blind, up, sir.
Blinded by vagina.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about this.
Yes, we know.
That's, yes, we do know.
Keep your sociopathic murder tendencies.
please. If you don't know, listen to Host Party number 2.
That's right. You'll find out why we never want to purge. No, it's okay. We figured out we're safe. You want to kill all men, but you would just go after the really evil ones.
Yes.
Like in real life. You would enslave the rest, probably. But I would fight you.
Okay.
We would rebel. No.
Okay.
I'd be like, okay, I agree with most of what you're saying. This is fine with me.
Yeah.
You shall live then, peasant.
Oh, no. I don't like where this is going.
No.
We do have a mostly female audience. It's like 15% of you listeners are male. So if you're a male listening to this, there's only so many of you.
Yeah,
we do appreciate
so
you.
Far. So
yeah,
far.
And I wonder why not a lot of males listen to the podcast, Ashley.
You know what? I appreciate you all, but you're trash.
Oh my god! I do not endorse the words of
Ashley. You have a husband.
I know I do, and I love him very much.
But you're trash.
But you're trash.
The thing that I would like our listeners to know is that all humans are trash.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
So just know that all humans, not just one of the sexes.
True.
Or any scale of sexes.
Yes, reduce, reuse, and recycle if we can.
What?
With all this human trash? I don't know. I don't know, guys.
All right, so they run for the train, and that's when we get back to our great sir, your knee. I don't know why I that stands out to me.
Well, because it's like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Because he's like touching her inappropriately. That's why it stands out.
And so then they hop up, they run like crazy, and she grabs the bag. I love the realism of that, of just like her like shoving her sister on the train and then getting up on the train and then composing themselves and
mm-hmm.
The adventure begins.
Right.
And they're just so out of breath. They're like, yep, we're here. We're here.
We did it.
Did you promise the cows you'd write?
Oh my god.
Oh god.
Dottie and Kit arrive at Harvey Field in Chicago for the tryout.
What? Hang on, what? What?
What?
What kind of summary is that?
What do you mean?
No, Marla is important.
They go into like all the people that they recruit.
Well, that just throws me off. All right, I guess continue and we'll talk about it.
Hang on, because it's like it's also I think it's down here farther even.
That's weird.
Hang on.
God damn you, Wikipedia. Go in order.
You're trash.
It's trash. Probably written by a male.
I can just stick it in there. I can say
that's what she said.
That's what this movie's about.
Like, I could put in the beginning after like I think, interviewing.
Well, I think that we should just continue.
Okay. Okay, I'll start over then. Dottie and Kit.
Did Shirley Baker write this summary?
What?
Did Shirley Baker write this summary? She can't read. Oh. I'm sorry.
Probably not. It would be something about milky white breasts. I so this summary doesn't do justice, and I want to go ahead and talk about Marla, because I like when they go to see Marla, and I like Marla's dad.
Yeah, me too.
Of course, like when the girls put their bags down, and the dad's like, you know, I know my girl ain't pretty like these other girls, but that's my fault. I raised her like that. And you see Marla crying into his chest.
Mm-hmm. That was just so sad.
And then you get to the train station, and the dad sits down with her, and he says, "You've got to go where things happen."
Yeah.
And then he lets his daughter get on a train and says, "Write to me." And like, my brain clicked, like, oh my God. Can you fucking imagine sending your kid out in a world that has no easy phone access?
No, you easy don't travel
have,
access.
No travel. You don't have social media. You have absolutely no idea what's going to happen to them, how to figure it out. And you are reliant on a letter to come through the snail mail.
Right.
I don't even think that we can grasp that kind of life.
No.
No. It would drive me insane.
I
mean, like, not if you never ever had it, you'd be okay. But knowing now and then, like, being without it, you'd go crazy.
Yeah.
And to think that when you were saying goodbye to your kid,
like, you're really saying goodbye. You don't have to talk to them again in a couple hours by picking up the phone.
Yeah, right. Or see what they posted on Facebook. I know that sounds so millennial, I guess, to talk
elder
about.
Elder millennial.
Yeah.
To talk about posting on Facebook.
Well, or to even just to be like, oh my God, can you believe you can't even get online? You know, like, of course you fucking can't get online. It was... But still, to actually put yourself in that moment of what that father is feeling, of letting her do something that's tremendous, but then also, like, the emptiness now.
Yeah, like, really sacrificing so much because she's his only person at all.
Right. Exactly. Right. But he tells her, you've got to go where things happen. And I feel like maybe not enough parents are like that. And I know like I'm gonna suffer with that of like, you love something, let it go. Like our kids need to go where they're going to be successful, and that may not be just where I want them to be, which is always under my roof where I know what's going on.
Right.
And so, like, later on when we let our children go out into the world, we're going to be able to pick up a cell phone and contact them. We're going to be able to track them on Instagram and all of that shit. But in this movie, this dad's heart was breaking while also being filled with joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I watched it differently this time because I'm a dad now. And I don't know that I've seen this movie in a while.
Yeah, in the last 9 years.
Yeah. So that really stood out to me. Just the go where things happen, like the great advice. And then the right to me.
Right. Just hearing you say 9 years pains me. Ugh.
I know it.
Yeah, because you're old too.
I remember life before your children. This is weird for me.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
Now let's take a break and hear about our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Okay, so we can go on with this crappy summary.
Okay, crappy summary. Here you go. Dottie and Kit arrive at Harvey Field in Chicago for the tryouts. There, they meet a pair of New Yorkers, taxi dancer May, and her best friend, bouncer Doris, along with soft-spoken right fielder Evelyn, illiterate, shy left fielder Shirley, pitcher and shortstop and former Miss Georgia beauty queen Ellen Sue, gentle left field and relief pitcher Betty Spaghetti, homely second baseman Marla, first baseman Helen, and superstitious Saskatchewan native Alice. They and eight others are selected to form the Rockford Peaches, while 48 others are split among the Racine Bells, Kenosha Comets, and South Bend Blue Sox.
I'm sorry, but, like, did you say her name's Dot, not Dottie? Crap, Rosie O'Donnell's character.
Doris.
She's a bouncer, and she's not with a woman.
Oh, my God.
And they were best friends, whatever.
And they worked at a basically a strip club.
Come on.
I mean, May was boy crazy. That's why I said, like, May and Doris didn't have to be together just because they were friends. Like, straight people and gay people can be friends without, having sex.
Yeah, I just meant for, like, the purpose of representation in the movie. They had that outlet, and they didn't choose to use it.
Right. No.
Did so in this description, they describe Marla as homely. Mm-hmm. When we're watching this movie now, it's like when you watch Friends and they talk about Monica and her fat years, mm-hmm. and you look at Monica and her fat years, and you're like, "Fuck, what?"
Yeah. What? Like, chill.
So then you look at this movie and you're like, "Look at this person who they're legitimately saying, like, we want you to be shocked by her appearance."
Yeah,
I'm not like, shocked.
No,
what?
Yeah. No.
Like, what are you talking about?
And right. Also, you can see, like, in the way that she's been directed and the way that she acts the role, that she's hunching over, she's scrunching up her neck into her chest to make her face look fatter. Like, she's really making herself look as, like, more unattractive. Like, it's not that she is unattractive, but the way that she's doing the character and she's been directed to do the character is making it that way.
Yeah. But then they have that fucking, where they do the newsreel and they cut to, like, they're like, how about that Marla Hooch?
Yeah, I can't see her.
And she's waving from 50 feet away.
You can't even see her. That cracked me up, but it made me feel so bad for her.
But it really does... It really makes you think about the way life used to be. And if you wore glasses, if you had bad skin, if you were overweight in the least, it called attention to you and you were made to feel extremely abnormal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we think today, like, we're so much more accepting, and I don't know how much more accepting we are actually for lots of different things. But to then think about how naturally cruel everyone would be.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that, you know, how easily we've always made fat jokes, or how we've always made plain Jane, ugly girl jokes, you know, and talked about, you know, whether blondes having more fun or any of these kinds of stereotypes, and even like positive stereotypes like blondes have more fun. Well, then if you're a blonde and you don't think people like you, then you feel bad about yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way a positive stereotype can be negative at you. And I don't know, I loved watching this movie for like my whole life, and now I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, movie? Like, she's not hideously ugly.
No.
There's no reason to have, like, the woman be, like, lots of night games.
Yeah.
Like, for what you can do to help her.
And yet she just walks away from her, like, doesn't even, yeah.
Like, we this person is so hideously ugly, we can't do anything. Well, get goddamn Connie and Carla over there at the I Hate My Body salon.
Worship your body.
Worship your body.
It's the only
the
one,
only
you,
one
got.
You got.
But, and they introduce all of these characters, and like Betty Spaghetti, you know, and her name is Betty Spaghetti, homemaker, wife, she cooks. Helen, who you said earlier, the tea maker. Mm-hmm. You have Ellen Sue, she had to be a beauty queen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The most, the country girl, well, she couldn't read.
Yeah,
and then May. Well, May had to be overly slutty,
like way, way, way out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Doris. I don't know. I don't even know. She had the whole thing about boys always made her feel bad because she liked boy things. And then I'm like, okay, but she should have gone a little bit like farther than this. Yeah, but then I think to myself, no, you can't, because that's also a stereotype. Girls can play sports and not be lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but right. In this case, it's because you're wanting that, because it's lacking.
Because it's not realistic.
It's not realistic that none of the women on any of the teams are thought of as being or shown to be lesbian or anything.
But LGBTQ. It's also the 40s, and it's basically fucking illegal, and you could be in prison. Mm-hmm. They would open up a whole can of worms to then have to, like, the movie would basically then become about any kind of homosexual relationship, because it wouldn't be believable, I guess, if people were like, oh, we're treating this like it's a normal thing. But then, well, I guess in that community, and it would have been.
They knew that these women existed, and it was, I feel like it was pretty common knowledge, and this was made after Philadelphia, right?
No, the year before.
The year before. Anyway, it was like people were talking about it more. Why not just have a gay character? Like a gay character. And I don't know.
Well,
they
addressed racism when they showed you where
the, oh, yeah, the black
people watched the game, and they had that one woman throw a ball. And that, I guess, would be realistic as to why there aren't any black players on the women's teams.
Right. And they had that nod, like that understanding nod, like, oh my God, you're so good, but I'm sorry you can't be here.
Yeah.
Right.
So I feel like it would have been more realistic probably in the movie if they did have a gay relationship and then those people were kicked out of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, or they had to hide in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But just address it in some way.
Right.
Or just even at the end of the movie at their reunion, be like, oh, you guys were together? Anything like that.
Yeah. Right. Or even like you said, the Doris in May, but even if you would have had not May teaching Shirley to read, maybe Doris was teaching Shirley to read, and then Doris and Shirley fell in love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have been that naturally smooth. Like, mm-hmm. to even not have to draw a lot of attention to it, but still not just leave out an entire history.
But, there were fangirls who, drove around following the All-American League so they could, be with their women.
Oh, but they did show you the fanboys who wanted to go after Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that could have been a perfect opportunity for fangirls. Maybe Doris never even realized she liked girls until girls started telling her that she was awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. That's another really sorely missed opportunity. But also, they went in the total opposite direction with the fanboys. They made, their most stereotypically gay character, they made sure to let you know that there were certainly men who wanted to have sex with her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
But also all the men were at war. Just come on, calm down.
Yeah. What, you know, with showing all of the men and.
Yeah.
And making sure the men dancing at the bar. I think one of them might have been wearing a uniform of some kind.
I think lots of them were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few in plain clothes, but there were several in uniform too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there most definitely should have been something. We talked about objectification. Ira Lowenstein, when they talk about the uniforms, says that there are 38 girls who will play in a bathing suit if we ask them to.
Yep.
And that's just that's just a kick in the face.
Yeah. Yep. You want to do this, you're going to do it the way the men enjoy it. That make right, you and amusing.
And then when they were talking about their uniforms and the women were we're playing in skirts, this is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that.
No, I don't know about all of the rules for like what would be in the contract for when men play baseball. You know, so when they say the things like there's no drinking and there's no smoking and no men, like
mm-hmm.
I don't think those were probably the rules for men who were playing baseball.
Hell no.
Or
no.
If they were, they didn't really get. I know in the next section, I think it's going to talk about the Jimmy Dugan, the good old coach for the Peaches. You know, mm-hmm. what a piece of work he is. But one of his lines is he describes that girls don't play baseball. Girls are what you sleep with after the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what Jimmy Dugan said. And so I'm thinking that the guys did not have the same rules and that this is complete control. It's objectification. It's dancing monkey syndrome. It is take a pretty thing, dress it up how we want it, control it how we want it, and we'll use it how we want it, and then we'll throw it away when we're done with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's like, huh. Maybe this is not a feel-good feminist movie. Because nobody fights again. They just all do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're desperate for the money. They're desperate to be happy. They are exploited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much of the way they did this movie did they want us to intentionally feel this way? Or like, how much is just like, we just made the movie.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
I think that's the worst part of it is like, they're like, oh, we've made this good movie.
Yeah.
Like they weren't thinking, let's make everyone feel uncomfortable about, you know, how this treatment of women is portrayed.
So
they thought they were doing a good job, I think.
But so do we have to say then, well, it's a foot in the door?
No, I don't. Not with this movie.
Like they were trying. I mean, I guess there were other movies that had been much better feminist movies. I mean,
I really think they were trying in this movie.
Yeah, I think it was
more like, we're going to do this, quote, historically accurately, which, yes, this is how women were treated. But did you have to do this in the movie? No. Did you have to have every single male who pops up in this movie mention something sexual about women? No, you didn't have to do that, but you did.
Right.
Like jumping ahead, there's a cab driver who's like a child.
Yeah.
And says something to Dottie.
Why don't you hop in the back seat and make a man out of me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if the husband, he just seemed to not know what the fuck was happening. He seemed willfully ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he was perfectly okay with letting his wife give up on everything.
Yeah.
And then having her come back or do whatever. Like, I don't know.
That's probably what he expected.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a big deal.
Like, oh, I'm back from the war. It's time for us to go home like we always would.
Right.
Even though you have this huge thing going for you and your sister.
And you're really good at it and you're really popular.
And you're making lots of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
We produce cookie cutter families. Like, we tell people, here's your role. Here's what you need to do to be happy. And don't step out of that. Don't you dare. Because then all of the troubles happen. Stay in your lane.
It's like, find that one person who loves you because nobody else probably will.
That's right. And then cling to it and make sure, because if you don't, the worst thing in the world is you will die miserably alone, no one having loved you.
But here's the thing. If you can't love yourself, how in the hell can you love somebody else?
It's almost like someone's been watching some Drag Race.
Yes. Too much, but not enough.
There's never enough Drag Race.
Never.
When you run out of American, you just switch over to UK or Canada.
That's what I'm going to do. I was upset that I had no Drag Race to watch after work today.
And now there's Australia on now. So, and I think they're coming out with Mexico.
Sure, okay. Yeah. They just need to do like a Puerto Rican based one, because I've had fun watching all the Puerto Ricans come to the show.
Watch with Trixie and Katya instead.
Yep.
Rock that.
What?
I'm trying to remember my French from high school. I think I'm sorry. It's J'ai désolé. I don't know. J'ai étudié la langue française pour 5 ans dans l'école. C'est it. That's it. Beefsteak, beefsteak, jambon, jambon. Jambon la beefsteak. But I didn't catch that person was French at all.
I didn't either.
You're just maybe making
maybe
stuff
I'm
up.
Maybe I'm making it up. Who knows?
Why would they have a French bus driver?
I don't know.
I don't know.
An immigrant. That would be the only representation in the movie, an immigrant.
This is true. Well, I mean, they have Canadians.
Irish.
And they said in Irish. But that's probably like the descendant. Not
in Swedes.
And Swedes. Yeah. So they do have some, they talk about representation.
Yeah.
You just only get to see Canadian Alice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the 3 black people who were watching the game that one time.
Yeah. That. That's dumb. I feel really bad for Mrs. Cuthbert. And I think that she worked really hard.
Yeah.
I think she did too. She had a really great moment when she was comforting the when Betty lost her husband.
Oh my god.
But then she had to deal with being smooched by Jimmy Dugan.
Well,
she was treated. Cuthbert was treated because she was doing her job like she was the stereotypical old lady who didn't want young girls to have fun.
Yeah, like an old maid.
The old maid.
Old maid chaperone.
But she was there for those girls. Mm-hmm. And she had to deal with Dugan. Dugan grabbed her fucking ass at one point.
Yeah.
And then like was like, oh, is she sleeping? Now I can drink. And it's like, yeah, no wonder we have such problems dealing with men and women. Because we normalized this fucking toxic shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And more people need to realize that we normalize toxicity.
It's dumb.
It's not just locker room talk. It's being a fucking asshole.
All right. Just go off on it.
I'm not going off on it. I'm just saying that what it is.
Yeah. And it's like, not okay to think that it's anything else.
I'm sorry. I keep talking over you.
No, it's just not okay to think that it's anything else or... And it's not okay to minimize it if someone tells you they think they experienced it.
Well, so then, like, is Jimmy Dugan a good character? Like, we're supposed to... He fucking rips up Betty Spaghetti's husband's card, and then the fucking husband dies!
He does! He's such an asshole!
She wants to get the card signed. He rips it up. Now she doesn't even fucking have a card.
Yeah, he's terrible, and he's paid too much, and he got what he deserved when he fucked up his position with his baseball team.
Yeah.
But no, we have to coddle the men who mess up. It's fine.
I'm so glad that they didn't do any kind of romance between him and Dottie.
Yeah. God.
Oh, God,
she was way too good for him.
Oh, yeah.
She would have bruised that udder.
But then, like, oh, so here's the thing, though. At the fucking, like, I know, I don't even know where we are talking about the movie anymore, but like, we're supposed to be watching a character arc of Jimmy. Like, he's supposed to become, like, the movie becomes about him becoming a better person because of all of the women.
Because that's our job in this world, don't you know? We're here to uplift the men.
I just felt like we're supposed to uplift ourselves.
That's how shit.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Oh, fuck that way. Okay, man. Tom Hanks is America's sweetheart.
But in this movie, he's an asshole.
Yeah,
total ass. And what is it about walking into the locker room and peeing like that?
Yeah, just
that was also a really weird, long, drawn out scene. And like,
it was.
They make a weird thing of like the timing when she starts timing him halfway through.
Yeah.
Like what?
And then never says the time.
Yeah.
And like some of the girls are embarrassed that it's happening. I love that May immediately starts walking towards him. It's like her body can't stop her from getting closer to the peeing.
Right.
And I just thought, what is this scene?
Yeah.
And he doesn't wash his hands.
And he, like, shakes himself for, like, however long, which is ridiculous. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, sometimes things that just spray. You got to make sure that you're not dripping on your pants.
Yeah, but that's a lot of, like, shaking around.
Yes, but you also don't want that dot on the front of your pants.
So okay. Use toilet paper like the rest of us.
Well, yes. Not everybody does that. And sometimes people who do that feel weird that they do that because other men don't do that.
Well, they fucking they should because that's gross.
Toilet paper's for everybody, not just vagines.
Yes, genderless toilet paper.
Clean your hole.
Toilet paper doesn't care about your genitals.
It doesn't.
Nope.
But that's your significant our other that's our first partners might thank you for not having a urine crusted equipment.
Yes.
But yeah, I just thought that that was a very odd, like, it wasn't a sexual scene, but it was very much a crossing of the genders. It was a boundary scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, I mean, he crossed boundaries all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When he peed everywhere, when he screamed at Stillwell's mom, when, I don't know.
He threw just, Kit in the shower.
He grabbed Miss Cuthbert's butt
on Ira's shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god! That's
so disgusting. So disgusting.
He decides. I don't like that. The moment he decides to become active in the baseball game, they make Dottie wrong, and they make him right.
Yeah, that made me angry.
Like Marla swung away, and I think, well, what was Dottie was trying to play it safe. She was just like doing whatever, and he was like, let's risk it, and now I'm right, you see, haha, now look into the dirt, I should be the coach. And it's like, oh fuck
no.
Yeah, this was one of those movies where I really wasn't expecting to have so many feelings, and I don't know if maybe like watching it now and talking about it, it's I got some things changing.
Yeah.
As Dottie becomes one of the league's brightest stars, Kit becomes resentful, and their sibling rivalry intensifies, culminating in Kit's trade to the Peaches' rival, the Racine Belles. The Peaches end the season with the league's best record, qualifying for the league's World Series. In the locker room, Jimmy gives Betty a telegram that informs her that her husband has been killed in action. The grief-stricken Betty leaves the team. Later that evening, Dottie receives a surprise when Bob shows up, having been wounded and discharged from the army. The following morning, Jimmy discovers that Dottie is going home with Bob. Unable to persuade her to at least play in the World Series, he tells her she will regret her decision.
Yeah, she misses, like, what, 6 games?
Yeah.
And then just pops back up for the last one. It's like, I'm here now.
Right.
At least they let her.
Well, and why did it take her so long? And now, and why, this is what I'm confused about. If she doesn't like baseball, why did she come back? To then she just leaves again.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing just kind of makes no sense.
Well, like after that. She gets her sister, like, accidentally traded and, like, messes with her dreams, she comes back to try and beat her sister. Like, if you're going to walk away, like, at least let your sister have her moment.
Right.
But she couldn't. She, in the very beginning of the movie, we showed that Dottie can't do that.
So, has Dottie grown at all over the course of this movie then?
No, she's the same. Like, she's talking to Jimmy on the bus, and he's like, you've got to know that you're the best player on the league. And she, like, gets him to say it. But then, like, so she's not. She doesn't think she's good. But she does the fucking splits. She catches the ball behind her back. She knows she's good. And she acts like she doesn't know she's good. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and then she's kind of a bitch to her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she not kind of. She's a bitch to her sister.
So why do they do that?
And then she like betrayed her sister. To be a
strong woman.
And like just the way that she like betrays her sister in the end of the World Series too. She's like, oh, she never hits the high ones.
I think my thought when I was younger was always like, I always wanted it to be like, okay, Dottie knows that Kit's finally going to hit it. But, you know, they really don't make any kind of hint that way. They don't make it seem like it's kind of resolved that way at the end. It's all up in the air.
I thought it was like she was testing her. Like she was letting her earn it. Like, did you finally learn after all this time what to do and what not to do? But I don't think it was. I think that she, I know we're getting ahead to the end of the game and the stuff like that, but we're talking about dropping the ball. And like, did she drop the ball on purpose? And like, when you're thinking about like, if she came back to this game to play after six games, she wanted to win.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that she did it on purpose. I think that she wanted to face off with her.
Like, she came back because she wanted to play her this one last time?
Yeah. Or maybe for the sole purpose of beating her. I don't know. I mean, that could be a reason, but...
I think that the relationship between Kit and Dottie was actually a pretty accurate sibling relationship. Like, in dealing with the way that siblings compare, or even the way that they tend to maybe think that the other one always has it better, or the grass might be greener, or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And they really were using hyperbole. They were showing you to like the intense moments for the film, like sibling rivalry. Yeah. And I wonder if it was one-sided. Like, Kit was justified in all of her thoughts. Like, was Kit right? Or was Kit being whiny and she was not just living her life because she was trying to be Dottie?
I think it's a mixture of both. I mean,
yeah.
Because, I mean, they make a point to let you know that Kit really isn't as talented as Dottie. You know, like, and she does have to grow, and you finally see maybe with the last game that she's grown in talent. But they never make it a point to show you that she's gotten any stronger emotionally or better with playing physically.
So you think that they treat Dottie and Kit equally in their relationship towards one another? They don't make one right over the other?
I don't really think so. I think they give each sister enough of like the like maybe some personality flaws so that they're both kind of in the wrong. I think they both made wrong decisions here.
Yeah.
I mean, Kit obviously had a lot of growing up to do, and Dottie obviously was like more in the bullying, not bullying, but like being more cruel towards her sister than
passive aggressively cruel.
Yeah.
I think that maybe it was also a part, like they were trying to show that because they were apart, they could grow in different ways. Like she, like Kit did it and she won and everything. And like, she proved to people that she could do it without her sister. Like,
and then and also like she needed to be out of her sister's shadow in order to shine.
Right.
Which kind of goes to like Marla's dad's advice of go where things happen.
Right.
Like you have to be able to put yourself in the situation where you are going to shine.
Exactly. And if that was on different teams, then who cares for the sisters? That's where the things are happening. Would that be so bad?
The Peaches face Kit spells in the World Series, which goes the full seven games. Dottie, having reconsidered during the drive back to Oregon, rejoins the Peaches for the seventh game, while Kit is the starting pitcher for the Bells. With the Bells leading by a run in the top of the ninth, Dottie drives in the go-ahead run. Kit is distraught but gets a second chance when she comes to bat with two outs in the bottom of the ninth. Under immense pressure, she gets a hit, and ignoring the third base coach's sign to stop, she scores the winning run by knocking her sister over at the plate and dislodging the ball from Dottie's hand. The sellout crowd convinces Harvey to give Lowenstein the onus support. After the game, the sisters reconcile before Dottie leaves with Bob.
I knew nothing about baseball, like, I don't know. I really don't know anything about baseball. So while I was watching this with my husband, he was like, that's like a real thing you can do in baseball is try to knock the ball out of the catcher's hand if you're trying to get home. It's pretty cutthroat. Apparently, there's a lot of fights that get started and people get ejected when they like kick dirt at each other or at the officials.
That's why the bus driver threw dirt. It was a nod to the dirt kicking.
You guys have to watch it on YouTube. It's bad.
Dirt kicking compilations.
Yeah, and then no, seriously, it turns into all out brawls with both teams.
When Dottie goes up to bat and she hits the ball right at Kit, what's that all about?
That's unnecessary.
Yeah, and we know from like all of the rest of the movie that Dottie is pretty precise. So
So she is she purposefully, okay, I'm trying to spin it. Is she purposefully provoking Kit so that Kit finally has that drive to beat her? Does Dottie know that Kit is eventually going to beat her and become stronger, but she's her little sister.
That's what I want to hope.
So in the beginning, she races her to make her run faster. She hits the ball right at her to make her want to come right at her because she knows that Kit's kind of weak and whiny.
Yeah, that's what I want that character to be, but I don't think it's ever really truly laid out in the movie. It's just like for our minds to think. Like that's what we want that character to
I
be.
don't know. They do show Dottie is cold. And old Dottie is cold. Normal Dottie is cold. Even when she's talking to, she's got a dry sense of humor. So I don't know. I might be coming back around to maybe Dottie's not as bad. Maybe it is manipulation, but it's for a good reason.
See, that's still just bad.
I don't know. Yeah. 95ers?
She's chaotic, neutral.
I don't know. I think that she really does care about her sister, and I think that she knows that her sister is a good ball player because she, in the beginning, she's like, "You can do this without me. You go." You know? So
Yeah.
I want to hope that she really does care and like is pushing her in like a sisterly way, but I don't know.
Yeah, because if not, she's really kind of like,
She's a bitch.
yeah, and she's maybe, I mean, Dottie is not a good role model character then.
Yeah, because I think we kind of already talked about how she like didn't really grow, and I just and how the we might have just been provoked by people who wrote a movie that make us feel icky. Maybe they're just like, hey, it's entertaining. She's being a bitch to her sister. Like, ha ha ha.
But then, like, Kit, maybe Kit is a good role model character.
She's the like rags to riches kind of baseball story, I guess.
Mean like determination,
Well, yeah.
drive, like just like you know going for your dreams and shit like that. I could see like for that reason, yeah.
She finds
Like
a way out of what's holding her down. And
right.
then she refuses to ignore the feeling she gets from being free. And she will not go back to any kind of societal servitude.
Right.
She's going to do what she wants. She talks about getting a job and an apartment, waiting out for the next season. And then at the end of the movie, she comes to the museum with her whole family. Like I said before, you see the picturesque Dottie family, but then you see Kit's family. And then you see that like Dottie's family is kind of cold. Like think back to the beginning of the movie. She tells one grandson to take it easy and then tells the other one, kill him. Like what's Donnie's personality trait? Like, what's her viewpoint of the world? How does she motivate?
Let's inspire conflict and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Chaotic evil.
So that's what she was doing with her sister, too. She was, like, supplying the conflict to see if she could push her. And then she stepped out. And maybe that's, I mean, if she would have kept up, but then she stepped out of the way and let Kit shine. I don't know that if Dottie had stayed in the league, she would have been Queen of Diamonds forever. Mm-hmm. Look at the way they still talked about her when she came back and they're like, she only played one season.
Right.
If she would have stayed the whole time, I don't know that Kit could have ever found what she found.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Dottie knew that. I don't know.
Oh, Queen of Diamonds. I get it now.
Oh, the baseball diamond?
Ashley.
Back in the present, Dottie is reunited with several other players, including Kit. The fates of several of the characters are revealed. Jimmy, Bob, and Evelyn have died. Marla has been married to Nelson for over 40 years. May and Doris are still best friends. And Kit is a mother and grandmother many times over. The original Peaches sing Evelyn's team song and pose for a group photo.
Aww. How endearing.
And they hug at the end, like Kit and Dottie haven't seen one another since they left that
baseball. I know. I was like, have they seen each other or not? Like, this.
Yeah.
It was unclear.
It was very unclear.
Yeah, so then, like, what kind of family bond is that? What kind of sisters were they then?
Yeah, bad one? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, sisters. So then that's not role model territory. That's not, like, proper good feminism.
No.
It's, I don't know.
I think that what we were supposed to get from this movie is there was a women's league.
And that's it. Women used to play baseball.
It is the women's baseball movie. Like,
it is the women's baseball movie. Yes, it is. You're correct.
And so, but then I guess, how snowflakey is it then? And like, is it, I mean, there's been change.
Not in this movie. Like, this movie wasn't like, here it is, let's make it better. This movie is just like, here it is.
Right? Or not even, there weren't even like, this is wrong. Like, why are you treating this person like shit? Why are you, I mean, there was a little bit of protest with the uniform issue, but then they just like went along with it.
Right. And all of the gracefully and grandfully learning how to be a woman scenes.
Learning how to be a lady.
Learning how to be a lady.
What the fuck?
If we ever adopt a girl, we've already decided that ladylike or like lady is not a part of our language. Like, that's not something we're going to say
be a lady or something like that. Yeah.
No, sit like a lady. Act. No.
What does that even mean?
That means shut up and sit still.
Which is exactly what Ira Lowenstein was, like, telling them. Mm-hmm. And how weird is that? And then, yeah, also, Ira goes from being the asshole who tells them and exploits them to being the one who saves baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably the most character growth.
Yeah.
And it's like,
say yes.
But, like, where does his character growth come from?
Just because, he was the only one who was like, oh, yeah, these women should have the same thing that the men do.
But why?
Well, he had to
money,
but he had to like witness.
He said that they were working hard. Like, that's what he pitched first to the owner guy. I can't remember.
So he was just one of those guys who perpetuated stereotypes to, like, I mean, because he stood up there and he threatened them with that outfit because he knew that's what the higher ups wanted or what he wanted. So, like, he was good to them, but only when it was good for him.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
No.
Four snowflakes, because I ranted about it.
I'm pretty sure I would give this four as well, just because of the heavy nature of all of the snowflakery fuckery going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty
I mean, pretty much every moment in this movie, I was like, what the fuck?
Right.
What the fuck? Mm-hmm. It, like, what the fuck?
That's really weird to think about and say, like, for A League of Their Own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I imagine trying to tell somebody that. You know this baseball movie that everybody loves and it's like the feminist girl baseball movie? Well, let me tell you how much it actually is horrible for you.
Right.
Well, yeah,
but that's what we're finding. Is that the truth?
I mean, yeah.
I think all four of us have come to that consensus. And this is a movie that I dearly loved.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I think the most feminist thing about this movie is the fact that there are women in this world, or were women in this world, who like dared to do this because they wanted to. Like, I think that's the most important thing.
Yes. Right. Well, and maybe we might ourselves, being the snowflake millennials that we are, we might really be missing something here in just how important it was to just talk about girls playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you three are so strong. You're all very intelligent. I mean, you are women who are, like, Xena warrior princess type, like, take shit from no one type of women.
Well, thank you.
Girls were not always like that. And girls didn't always know they could be like that. And so just to have a movie that showed a girl doing something that a boy did, we might be missing that in itself is really, really impactful, but it's also so fucking sad that was so impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Such a poor representation was so impactful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see your point. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just now in this time, in this day and age, watching it, you know, now, we definitely want more, need more from it.
Oh, but hell then.
Yeah. But then, yeah, obviously, because like watching it then, we all loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And now here mm-hmm. we are being like, oh my God, I'm so disappointed at how horrible this movie is.
But think about if it would have done all of the things that we want. Fucking think about how women with short hair are treated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So then think about how, like, if they did try to go ham on the reality of feminism, it already only made $132 million compared to other Tom Hanks movies.
Mm-hmm.
It had less of a box office already being pretty girls in pretty outfits play baseball. So, like, can you imagine if they really were tackling the issues? Like, fuck if they put up abortion in this fucking movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about how much they didn't go into with Evelyn raising that kid with that deadbeat fucking husband.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if they would have gone real, real reality, I don't know if people would have had it be so endearing of a classic.
Yeah, it may not have been.
But I guess it has to be rated a 4 snowflakes. It's rantable and it's beyond social change. But do you still recommend it?
I don't
either. Like, I like this movie and I enjoyed it more, you know, in the past, but I don't think I would recommend it to somebody just because of all the things they say and they don't address in a positive way after they say the things that they say.
Yeah.
And they do the things they do. Sorry. I would tell people to watch A Secret Love instead.
Yeah.
That's the documentary on the women baseball players who had the relationship.
It's focused on a couple, like one couple. One of them was, she played for one of the teams, but yeah.
Okay.
So, like, you get important history for the team, and then you get important, like, gay history as well.
Kristen?
Now watching it, I would say probably not, unless someone was, like, directly talking to me about this subject, maybe. But back then, yes, I would have.
It really kind of hurts to think about, do the positives outweigh the negatives? And Sarah, you're exactly right that there's a complete difference between showcasing something and then adding a resolution to how to deal with that something.
Right.
Or just presenting that negative.
Right. And you're just saying, like, this is wrong.
They have too many open-ended negatives.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't think I'd be like, hey, kids, sit down and watch this movie. But that actually kind of breaks my heart.
Yeah. It is. It's very sad. Because this is supposed to be like that American feel-good classic Tom Hanks, Gina Davis movie. And that's what it was for, I mean, all of us. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not Ashley, but...
Yeah, like, sorry.
But
that's what it was. And now it is sad to watch it in our 2021 minds and see how wrong it is.
But maybe I want, like, kids to see it, and I want them to say, why doesn't she stay? Like, why doesn't she play? And then you can say, well, because people in that time were taught that they had certain roles, you know, and then you don't have those roles anymore. Like, sometimes you need adversity to grow. You need to feel hot to know what feeling cool feels like. And right. if we don't surround ourselves with learning moments, we stop learning. We just accept things for how they are. So this we don't think about why they are how they are.
Right. So, like, this is also what not to do.
Yeah. And another thing I just started wondering was like the idea of what feminism looks like in movies different back then than what it is now. Like, or because I don't know, I feel like we have so many well done documentaries and like other historical movies that have just been so well done that give a lot of different angles now that like we didn't have back then. So I'm just wondering, is that a difference that we hadn't really talked
about? Well, and I think I'm going to carry off of that, and I think I'm going to say that I would recommend this movie because I want to talk about it now. I think this is one of those movies where I want to know what other people think about it. Like, are we taking it too seriously? Are we missing something that is right in front of our faces? And should we talk about comparisons of how feminism is portrayed in this film and that? Does it give us a narrative that we can discuss? And I think that obviously the movie's done something. So I might not say just to anybody, and definitely maybe not to like, hey kids, you need to see this. But if we're talking about feminism, if we're talking about equality, if we're talking about how far we've come, I might throw the film out there as a, you know, what would be interesting is if you thought about this, because I think right. It does offer an interesting study.
I mean, yeah, as long as like, you're like, this is not how we do it anymore, you know?
Yeah. For straight up entertainment, I don't think so.
No.
But
yeah, but for teaching value, sure.
Well, and to know what someone thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend it in that way. But I'm not going to have this be one of the movies that like one of my like my kids have to see in order to like get out of the house, pass go, and collect $200. Long Kiss Goodnight. We'll watch that one instead. All right. So we given our snowflake ratings, given our non-recommends, we're at the very end of this podcast. Boop. It's about time to try to find how I can connect this thing to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Buffy.
Well, this connection to Buffy is actually going to be pretty easy. I already said it earlier in the podcast. I used to have to watch with my sister all of the time, Harriet the Spy. And who's in Harriet the Spy? Rosie O'Donnell. But who plays Harriet but Michelle Trachtenberg, who is on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Yeah, so that one was pretty easy.
And you can check that out on Facebook at Millennial Movie Mix. And you can also check us out on Instagram at Millennial Movie Mix Podcast.
And be sure to come back next week when we start our summer series of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Up first, all the month of June, is sex. Wild Things starts it off from 1998. So make sure you come back. All right, we'll see ya.